The Yeshiva Gedolah of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
The miracle of Purim centered around Mordechai v'Esther. Mordechai v'Esther were exceedingly great people in accordance to the opinions of our sages. The Medrash brings in Medrash Rabbah, in Esther Rabbah, Parshas Vov Beis, Ish Yehudi Hoyo B'Shushan Abiro, states that there was an Ish Yehudi, a Jewish man, that lived in Shushan Abiro, that lived in Shushan, the capital. Why is he referred to as an Ish, as a man? Melamed Shoye Mordechai Shokel B'deire K'meisha B'deire. To teach us that Mordechai can be compared in his generation to Meisha Rabbeinu in his generation. D'ksiv Beivo Ish Meisha Onif B'deire. Because the Torah also refers to Meisha as an Ish, as a man. That the person, the man Meisha, was a great, very, very humble. Ma Meisha Omad B'peretz. Af Mordechai came. And just like Moshe stood up when the walls became broken, and he stood up to protect Klal Yisrael, so did Mordechai. And then the Medrash tells us further. V'yesh Emrim, some say, Sheyishokol ki Avraham b'deiri, that he was equal to Avraham in his generation. Ma Avraham Avinu Mosar Esatz Melesekif Shone Eish Vehekse Vihike Lebrias Gidulasi Shelakorish Baruch Hu. Just like Avraham threw himself into a fiery furnace in order that all of the people of the world could recognize the greatness of HaKorish Baruch Hu, of the Almighty. Af Mordechai. So did Mordechai. As it states, V'rabi me'am oretz mishadim, that many of the peoples of the land came and they became Jews. They joined Klal Yisrael after the great miracle of Purim. V'yachid shmei shel HaKorish Baruch Hu v'kishui. And he sanctified the name of the Almighty. L'fichach nikra Yehudi. Therefore he was called Yehudi. And the Gemara tells us, in regards to Esther, the Gemara in Megillah, Sechta Megillah Daf Yudalit, Omer Ababa Bar Kahana, Ton Rabbonan, Arboim Ushmeinim Neviim V'Sheva Neviois Nisnabu Lehem Yisrael. There were 48 prophets and 7 prophetesses that gave prophecy to Israel throughout their history. And none of them either added anything to the Torah or took away anything from the Torah. With the exception of Esther, that she came to the Sanhedrin, she came to the great court, and she requested that a new mitzvah be added. The mitzvah of the reading of the Megillah, the mitzvah of Purim. And then the Gemara tells us, on what basis were they able to accept such a request? Of these 7 prophetesses, which stood up during the history of Klal Yisrael, one was Esther. The Gemara brings, how do we know Esther was a prophetess? As it states in the Megillah, Vayhi bayom hashlishi, Vatilbash Esther Malchus. When Mordechai told Esther to go to the king and to appeal to him to save all of the Yehudim, so Esther said, tell everyone to fast and I also will fast for 3 days and three nights. Vayibayem ashlishi. And on the third day, Vatilbash Esther Malchus, Esther put on royalty. Bigdei Malchus miboilei. It should stay garments and royalty. It says only royalty. El Shalov Shoruach HaKodesh. It refers that not only did she put on the garments of royalty, but she garbed herself in the royalty of HaKodesh Baruch Hu. That the Shechina, HaKodesh Baruch Hu's presence, after the 3 days of fasting and the 3 days of appealing to HaKodesh Baruch Hu with tefillah, garbed her, came in her presence. And from here she was Zeche, from here she came to become a prophetess. So we see that these two figures, Mordechai and Esther, in their generation, were very, very great. And it was through them that this miracle came about, that saved all of Klal Yisrael, all of the Jews of the world, because they were all subjects to Ahasuerus at that time. And it was set aside for days, for generations, that Purim always would be a day which we would commemorate through the mitzvahs of Purim, through rejoicing, and through the reading of the Megillah, through the Mishleach Monais, giving gifts one to another, and Matonis Leavyoinim, gifts to the poor. However, aside from this greatness that we find by Mordechai and Esther, we find also another element, that they both had the power of Malchus, the power of royalty. Where do we see this? As we see in several instances. Firstly, the Gemara tells us in Megillah Daf Yud Daled that Esther and Mordechai came from the family of Saul, of King Saul. It was for this reason that when she was taken by Ahasuerus, Mordechai commanded her not to tell what family she came from, not to tell that she was Jewish and what family she's from. And the question is asked, why? Mordechai didn't want her to be kept by the king. And if she would have revealed that she was Jewish, so most likely he would have sent her away. So the answer is because Mordechai was afraid that if he would realize she was Jewish, he might investigate what family she's from. And they were from the tribe of Binyamin, as it states, Ishbini. And what family in Binyamin? The family of Shaul HaMelech, of King Saul. And Ahasuerus himself, like all kings, when it comes for a queen, they want royalty. And in particular Ahasuerus. Because Ahasuerus himself did not come from royalty. HaMelech Molach Mi'atzmai. He took over the kingdom himself. His queen, his former queen, Vashti, had come from royalty. She was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babel, who had destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and brought Klal Yisrael into the Golus, into the exile. And now that he killed her, he especially wanted royalty. So Mordechai was afraid. Therefore he commanded her. She should not tell. And even though Ahasuerus tried with all types of influences to get her to tell the secret, she still would not. He made great banquets for her, and he offered her all types of wealth. But it states that Esther would not. She would not reveal to him what family she was from. And the Gemara brings that this shows the great power of tzniut, of modesty, and of secrecy that she had. Had she revealed, she would have become greater in the eyes of Ahasuerus. Says that she inherited this from Shaul, from King Saul, who also was a very modest, humble person. When Shmuel anointed him to become the king, and he went back to his father's house, his Dvara Malchus Lehigit, he didn't tell his father that Shmuel told him that he was going to be the king because of his humility. And the Gemara traces this back even further to Rochel, because Binyamin was one of the two sons that came from Rachel, Binyamin and Yosef. And Rachel also was a very secretive, modest person. When Lavan deceived Yaakov, and he gave that night to Yaakov Leah instead of Rachel, immediately Rachel should have told Yaakov, and it would have been to her benefit. But she did not want to harm her sister, and therefore she didn't tell the secret. So we see that they had come not only from good stock, but from royal stock. And we see that Esther became the queen of Ahasuerus. Now Ahasuerus was not by no means a simple person. The Gemara brings, and that's Yud Aleph, Tone Rabbonon, Shleisha Malku Bekipa. There were three kings that ruled the Kippa Tachas Kol Kippa Sarakia. They ruled over the entire world. There were three kings that reached that level. Elohein Ahav, Ahasuerus, and Nebuchadnezzar. And these were the three. Ahasuerus was one of them. And when the Megillah tells us that he ruled over 127 Medinais, because these were all of the known lands in the world at that time. And nobody can rule over the world unless he has the power to be a king. Unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu has granted him that power. Like we say, HaMamlich Melochim, he who gives the king the right to rule. And the fact that Esther became his queen, this means she became a queen over the entire world. It also shows us that she had this power of royalty, of kingship. Even though Ahasuerus was a great Rosha, he was a very evil person to conspire with Haman. L'hashmid l'abed es kol ha-yehudim, to destroy all of the Jews of the world. But nevertheless, this does not retract from his tremendous force, from his tremendous world influence, from his tremendous capabilities. Because no one becomes a king, especially a king of this gravity, unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives his agreement to it. And there's a Medrash that tells us that when Esther was captured by this king, she referred to him as a caliph, as a dog. And later on, she felt that this was a hate, this was a sin. And therefore she called him a lion, an evil lion. Because how evil he might have been, you can't refer to a person in that position as a dog. Because the dog is from the most non-prestigious animals. So therefore she changed and she said he was the evil Aryeh, the evil lion. This was his great gevura, his strength. So if Esther became a queen to this king, this means she was a queen of the entire world. And also we find at the end of the Megillah, Mordechai became Mishnah LeMelech. He became the viceroy to this king, which means also he was a world figure. So we see that besides these two being of such great heights when it comes to prophecy or when it comes to righteousness, but by their very nature they are also the power of royalty and nobility. And the sages point out to us, where did this power come from? The Medrash tells us in Bereshis, Rosh Rabbah Breishis at the end of Parshas Noach, or at the beginning of Chayei Sorah, Nun Ches Gimel, Rebbe Kiva Hayeshiv Ederish. Rebbe Kiva once was giving a shir, Rat Sibur Mizdamnein, and he saw that the audience, the people, were falling asleep. So Bikesh La'ayrano. So he decided to say something that would bring them all to their attention. And he said, Ma Rosa Esther Shetimlech Alsheva Ve'esri Mumea Bedino. From where did Esther receive her power that she was to rule over 127 states? And the Tome Esther Shoyes Abazbitish of Sora. Esther, who was the granddaughter, the descendant of Sora. Shoyes Akuf Bechov Bezayin, who lived 127 years, let her come, let him let Hakuf Bechov Bezayin Medines. Let her come and rule over 127 states. It's not merely by coincidence that Esther ruled 127 states and Sora lived 127 years. But the Rekiva is telling us that the power that Esther had to become such a ruler, this she inherited from Sora. And we find by Sora at the end of Parshas Noach that Sora is referred to as Yizkor. She's given a name besides Sora, Yizkor. Rashi tells us, Zu Sora, Losh Nesichus. Why was Sora called Yizkor? Because Yizkor, Losh Nesichus, means royalty. Kimei Sora, Losh Nesichus. Just like Sora means to be a princess. So we see that Sora, besides being the great Sora and the great wife of Avraham Avinu, she also was a princess. Royalty. And this royalty Esther inherited. And this was a source for her to become a ruler over the entire world. We find also that there's a later source, an additional source for their malchus, for their royalty. And this is in Parshas Vayigash. After Yosef revealed himself to the brothers and he made a big party for them, so the Torah tells us in Vayigash Mem Hechov Beis, Lechulam Nosan Luish Khalif Ismoles, to all of the brothers, Yosef gave one change of garments. And to Binyamin, he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. All of the brothers, he gave one change of garments. And to Binyamin, he gave 5 changes of garments. And naturally, he favored Binyamin because Binyamin was his brother, not only from his father, but also from his mother. And the Gemara asks on this. The Gemara and after Zayin on the base. I'm a second Megillah. The Gemara asks, after Bavishin instead of Reisit Sadik Yikoshel Bay, is it possible that this, what caused so much anguish to Yosef himself, then he himself would be at fault to repeat it? Because of the garment which Yaakov Avinu gave Yosef extra over the other brothers. He gave him Seinis Pasim, he gave him a beautiful garment to wear, a coat of many colors. It was because of that, that's what started the whole quarreling. And because of that, eventually, we ended up in Egypt. Because they were Mekana, they were jealous. And then they wanted to kill him, and then they sent him down to Egypt. And this is how we got to Egypt. So is it possible that this that caused the trouble was Yosef himself? Then Yosef himself would be at fault by favoring one of the brothers. Omar ibn Yamin bar Yefes. So ibn Yamin bar Yefes says no. The five garments that he gave, this the Vilna Gaon explains in a place. The five garments that he gave were not worth more than the one garment he gave to every brother. So there was no chance, there was no need for jealousy. They were all worth the same. Each was of the same value. Except for some reason he chose to give Binyamin five garments, while the others only one garment. But there was no need for jealousy because everyone received an equal value. So why did he give him five garments? Remez Romez Lei. Sheosit ben lotzeis mimenu, sheyetzim belifnei hamelach bechavisha levushim malchus. He was giving a remes, an indication to his brother Binyamin, that a descendant will come from him, who will go before the king in five garments, five kingly garments. Where did we find that? In the Megillus Esther, it states Mordechai, this is in Posuk Tesvot Ches Tesvot Mordechai Yotze Melifnei HaMelech. Mordechai went before the king Belevush Malchus with royal garments. Tchelis, a garment of blue wool. Bachur, another garment called Chur, Vater Zuhov, and a crown of gold, Gedeilo, Vesachlich boots, and a linen cloak, Biargomon, and purple wool. Vayirshushan Sohalo Vesemeko. Mordechai went before the king with five kingly garments. So Yosef was indicating to Binyamin that I'm giving you five garments, because your descendant, Mordechai, will also go out with five kingly garments. And what is meant by this? What is meant is, Yosef also was a king. And he was giving part of his kingship to his brother Binyamin. He said, here, take it. And it will be used, it will manifest itself in your descendant, Mordechai. And it's interesting to note that when Yaakov wanted to single out Yosef more than all of the brothers and appoint him as the king over the brothers, he gave him the mantle of many colors, like Seinis Pasim. So Yosef, who received his kingship through the symbolic act of Yaakov giving a mantle to him, he gave part of that to his brother Binyamin, which he said will be used by your descendant when he will wear the five royal garments. When he goes before Ahasuerus, when he's appointed as the viceroy, as the Mishnah LeMelech. So Yosef saw this kingship, and he helped it along. And we find that there are a good many resemblances, comparisons between the kingship of Yosef and that of Mordechai Esther. First of all, they both reigned in Golus, in exile. Yosef became the king of Egypt, and Mordechai and Esther, they became the king and queen of Moda and Paras, of Persia. Secondly, we find that they were both Mishnah LeMelech to Malchei Amim. They became viceroys to kings of Goyim. Yosef became viceroy to Paroi, and Mordechai became the viceroy to Achashverosh. Thirdly, we find they were both from the sons of Rochel. Yosef and Mordechai, who came from Binyamin, these were the two sons of Rochel. And fourthly, we find that even though both of them were not only in Golus in the exile, but in the greatest depths of the exile, they guarded themselves and their children from any assimilation. Mordechai and Esther, not only were they in Shushan and Biro, but they were in the house of Ahasuerus, the palace of Ahasuerus. Esther, who lived in the house of Ahasuerus, under the influence of the king, still remained the same righteous Esther. And Yosef, that lived in the house of Paroi, in the great deep darkness of Egypt, still remained Yosef HaTzadik, the righteous Yosef. And this was their power. And this was a power which they had inherited from their mother Rochel. Because the sages tell us, why was Rochel buried al aderech? When Yaakov was coming into Eretz Yisrael, and he was a few miles outside of a city, and Rochel died, he was commanded that he should bury Rochel on the road, not bring her into the city. Because Rochel would be the one who would guard the unity of Klal Yisrael when they would go into Golos. They would go down that road into the exile. Rochel would pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this would give them the power to return, to remain the same and to return. And this was the power that her sons had, Yosef and Binyamin, Mordechai and Esther. So we see, besides Mordechai and Esther being very great, we see they also, they were a king and queen in the full state of being. This was not merely by coincidence, but it had to be this way. Why did it have to be this way? Because their adversary was Haman. Haman was the one who conspired with Ahasuerus, who slandered Klal Yisrael, said she'ein sheva la'anichot, they're of no use to the king. It's a nation which is scattered and different than all other nations. Do away with them. Haman, the adversary, the Megillah tells us, was Me'agogi. He was from Agog. Agog, the king of Amalek. He was an Amaleki. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Amud Beis, and the Rambam brings this in the beginning of Hilchos Malachim. Tanya Rabbi Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi learned, Shleish mitzvahs nitzavu Yisrael mikinisosim lahoritz. When Klal Yisrael comes into Eretz Yisrael, they are commanded in three mitzvahs. Lahamid lohem melech, to appoint for them a king. Lahachris zari shel Amalek, to destroy the seed of Amalek. Velivnois lohem beis ha-bachira, and to build the beis ha-mikdash. Means when we come to Eretz Yisrael, we have three mitzvahs to perform: the appointment of a king, to destroy the seed of Amalek, and to build the Beis HaMikdash. What is the order? What are the priorities of these three mitzvahs? The Gemara asks. So the Gemara says, First comes Lahamid Lohemelech. First we must appoint a king. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ki yad al keizko milchome l'Hashem ba'amalek, that I raise my hand by my throne, that I will make war with Amalek. What does it mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu raises his hand by his throne, that he will make war with Amalek? Where is his throne? His throne is in the Melech Israel, the throne of Israel. So before we make war with Amalek, there must be a throne in Israel. So first we must appoint a king. After we've appointed the king, what should we do? Should we destroy Amalek, or should we build the Beis HaMikdash? So the Gemara says no. First, lahachriz arish al Amalek. We must destroy Amalek. Because it states, Ve'aniach lachem mikol eiveichem, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you peace from all of your enemies, then you shall build the Beis HaMikdash. Not until you've had peace from all of your enemies. And this we find. We find that first, Shaul, King Saul, and David HaMelech went to war. First they were appointed kings. Then they went to war against Amalek. And then David said, Vayim HaMelech al Nosan Anobi. David said, Reino Nechi Yeshiv Bebeis HaArozim. I am sitting, I am dwelling in a castle of cedar wood. Darein Hashem, and the Ark of the Almighty, is in an ohel, in a Beis Yerias, is in a tent. So this is the order. First, when we come into Eretz Yisrael, we must appoint a king. Then go to war against Amalek. And then we must build the Beis HaMikdash. Now we can understand why Amalek must be destroyed before the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Because these are two things which are contrary to each other. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yod al Keith Ko, I raise my hand that my throne is not complete and my name is not complete as long as Amalek is in the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, says that he has war with Amalek door in every generation, because my throne and my name are not complete as long as they are in the world. And the Beis HaMikdash, this represents the Shleimus, the perfection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How can there be a perfection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu if Amalek is here in the world? So therefore, first Amalek must be destroyed, and then the Beis HaMikdash must be built. But why? First we must appoint a king and then go to war with Amalek. Why can't we first go to war with Amalek and then appoint a king? The answer to that is, and it goes deeper, the answer to that is what does it mean that Israel should have a king? A king by the nations of the world. He's the king. He's the Rosh. He's the Elyon. He's on top. He is the monarch, and everyone is his subject. Everyone humbles themselves to the power of the throne. This is what it means, a king of the nations of the world. But what does it mean to have a king by Israel? How is it possible that he should be the Elyon, he should be the apex, and everyone should humble themselves to him, when the king is the Melech Malchei Melochim? The king of Israel is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the king of all kings. So what is the concept of a king by Israel? The answer is, the duty of a king in Israel is different than that of a king by other nations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king be'el yedim. He is the king in the upper world. It is the king's function, the king of Israel's function, to bring his kingship, the tachtenim, into this world also. Not to make himself as the king of Israel when everyone subjects themselves to him alone, but rather to represent the king of all kings and to bring the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world. Like the Gemara said, the Gemara that we quoted stated, how do we know that there must be a king before we go to war with Amalek? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I raised my hand by my throne, Yorav Kis Kro, Milchoma Amalek Dor Dor, that I have war with Amalek all of the time. And the Gemara says, what does it mean he raises his hand by his throne? By the throne of King of Israel. His throne in this world is the throne of the King of Israel. He is the king in the heavens, but he wants to be the king in this world also. Therefore, the function of the King of Israel is to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's majesty into this world, and to sanctify his name in the world, to represent his kingship. It comes out then that there's a basic difference between the kings of the Goyim and the kings of Israel. The king of a Goyim of the nations, they're a king. The king of Israel, he's not a king, he's a prime minister. He is the highest minister to the king of all kings, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is what he must do. He must bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kingship into the world. Actually, we find this explicitly in the Torah, in Parsha Shaftim. It states, in Dvarim Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tezbo, Som Tosim Alecho Melech Asher Yivkan Hashem Elokecha Goy, you shall make for yourself a king over you, and he shall rule. Then it states, when he will sit on his throne, he shall write the Sefer Torah. Not only does it say he shall write the Sefer Torah, it states as Mishne HaTeirah Hazeis, he shall write two Sifrei Torah. Every Jew was commanded to write one Sefer Torah. The king was commanded to write two Sifrei Torah. What were their purposes? So Rashi brings the Gemara. Acha Shimu Nachas Bebeis Genosov. One Sefer Torah is placed for safekeeping in his treasury. Acha Shemichneses V'yetzis Imai. And the other Sefer Torah he takes with him wherever he goes. The Gemara tells us it was a small Sefer Torah which he could bind on his arm. And wherever he would go, he would take the Sefer Torah. If he would go to war, the Sefer Torah would go with him. If he would go to a conference with other kings, the Sefer Torah would go with him. Everyone was obligated to write one Sefer Torah. He was obligated to have two Sefer Torah. One would be for safekeeping, and the other would go and come wherever he went. What was the purpose? V'hoyese imai, the Sefer Torah shall be with him, v'korabai kol yimei chayiv, and he shall read it all of the days of his life. In order that he shall fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and guard all of the words of the Torah. Levilti rum levove me echov. He shall not become arrogant over his brothers. Ulevilti sura bin abitzvah yominu smol. And he shall not turn from the mitzvahs to the right or to the left. Now what does it mean he shouldn't become arrogant over his brothers? The king was supposed to be arrogant. The king was supposed to be above his brothers. What does it mean that he shall fear the mitzvahs of Hashem? A king, everyone is supposed to fear him. He's not supposed to fear someone else. The answer is that a Melech Yisrael was the prime minister of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was to represent the Malchus, the kingship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was his Malchus. To bring the royalty of Hashem into the world and to sanctify his name throughout the world. Like Dovid HaMelech did. That the whole world knew of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because wherever Dovid HaMelech went, he took the Sefer Torah with him. Not that the people shall fear him and he shall fear no one. The people shall fear him and he shall fear the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the difference between a king in Israel and a king by the nations of the world. It could be that this is the interpretation we have in Shmuel Aleph Perkhes. This was the first time the people came and demanded a king. There were no kings till then, no formal kings. There was Moshe and Yeshua. But after they came into Eretz Yisrael, there was no formal king yet. And during the time of Shmuel, of Samuel, in Shmuel Aleph Perkhes, Posuk Dalet, states, Vayiskapsu kol zikne Yisrael vayavo el Shmuel haramoso. All of the elders of Israel came to Shmuel. And they said, Atozo kanto, you're getting old. You're a prophet, you're getting old. Vanecha lo holchu bidrochecho, and your sons are not following you. Ato simo lona melech. Make for us a king. Nishofteinu kechol hagoyim, who will be a king for us, a judge for us, like all of the nations of the world. Vayera hadover ve'enei Shmuel. And Shmuel became very upset over this request. And he went to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu became very upset over this request. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin asks, what's everybody getting so upset for? This is a mitzvah, same tosim olecho melech. It states that you should appoint a king for yourself. They were only coming to fulfill one of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So the Gemara says, because b'shal b'tarutz, it was the way they asked. And there are different interpretations, what is meant, the way they asked. They asked, make for us a king, l'shofteinu k'chol hagoyim, that will be a king like all of the nations of the world. They didn't understand what a king of Israel is. They said, make for us a king like the king of the nations of the world, that will be a monarch over us, not a representative for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's monarchy. This was their avera. And this Shmuel answered them. He said, you'll make such a king, you know what he'll do. He'll take your children away, and he'll take your lands away, and he'll take your horses away, and he'll sell you for slaves also. There's a basic difference between a king in Israel and a king amongst the nations of the world. And the Mechilta tells us, the Mechilta in Parshas B'Shalach, states that eventually who was to become the kings of Israel? The first king was Saul. Saul was from Binyamin. But he lost the kingship, as we'll see a little later on. From then on, the kingship went to Yehuda, to the tribe of Yehuda, and it stayed by them forever. And this was Dovid HaMelech, Dovid and Shlomo and Solomon, and you see, the Mechilta said, what did Yehuda do to be zeche to the Malchus? What act did he do that ensured that royalty should come from him forever? So the Mechilta says that when Klal Yisrael went out of Egypt, and they were standing by the sea, and they were pinned in between the desert and the armies of Parai and the great and mighty sea, and they didn't know what to do. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, tell them to go through the sea, and no one moved. Kofatz Nachshon ben Amidonov, Nachshon the son of Amidonov, the descendant of Yehuda, jumped into the sea, and he said, Hashem Yimloch le'olam va'ed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reign forever. He will reign over the entire world and over the sea also. And then the sea split. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Mi shehim lichani tchila rayam, he who made me the king over the sea, Hu yimlech al Yisrael, he will become the king of Israel. Mi shehim lichani, he who caused me to reign over the sea, he will be the king of Israel. Yehuda brought the royalty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. This was his kingship. Therefore, he became the king of Israel. Now, if we give some thought to Amalek, we'll find that Amalek is exactly contrary to this concept. What was so terrible about Amalek? The Torah tells us in two places. At the end of Parshas Bishalach and at the end of Parshas Kisetze. That Amalek came to fight with Klal Yisrael immediately after they went through the sea. After they went out of Egypt, and they went through the sea, and Parai and his armies were destroyed, states Vayomer Amalek. Amalek came to fight with Klal Yisrael. Now, we can ask a great question. In Parshas Yisro, which we learned just a few weeks ago, it states, Vayishma Yisro. Yisro heard, his kol asher osa lekim l'meisha, everything that Hashem did to Meisha, ul Yisrael amay, and to Israel as nation. Ki heitzi Hashem Yisrael mimitzroim. That he took his nation out of Egypt. Rashi says, what did Yisro hear? He heard of the Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea. He heard of the great miracles. And Vayova Yisrael, and Yisrael came to join Klal Yisrael, even though they were in the desert, he sought them out. How did he hear all of these things? As I'll tell us, the entire world heard. Shomum Amim Yirgozum, the nations heard and they trembled. The Philistines heard and they were shattered by fear. The whole world knew of it. How? One of the reasons why they knew of it is because Vayiboku Hamayim Hayam Leinamar. It does not say that the sea split, but the water split. All of the waters in the world split. And Klal Yisrael were 600,000 men between 20 and 60 years old, taking into account the older people and the multitude of children they had and their wives. They were millions. And Egypt was the power of the world. And the sages tell us that a slave never escaped from Egypt. And here millions of people walked out. And they left Egypt in ruins. And all of the waters of the world split. All of the nations heard and they trembled. Yet Amalek came to make war with Israel. Why did they come? They should have known better. The Torah tells us, "V'le'yore elakim," they did not fear Hashem.
It was the ultimate in not fearing Hashem.
And then it states, "Asher korcho baderech." They met you in an incidental manner on the way. And the Gemara darshins from the word korcho, loshen mikro. In an incidental manner. Amalek were kofrim. They denied the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They also heard. They weren't totally ignorant. They heard and they knew. But they denied the fact that it came from the Almighty. Any control, without any guidance, without any uniformity, without any order to the universe. That's why it states, Asher korcho baderech, loshen mikro. Mikro means something that happens on its own. Loshen keri. The Torah says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that when I bring affliction and punishment on you, you shall not walk with me bekeri. You shall not say that it's just happening because kachi min hogay shel elam, this is the nature of the world. But you must realize that everything that happens to you is coming from my hand. And Amalek was the opposite. Loshen mikro, loshen keri, asher korcho. And then the sages make another drosha from this word. Mikro kor. Kor became cold and hot. Korcho also comes from the word kor, cold and hot. What does it mean, cold and hot? They cooled off what was hot before. Marshal, an example, ambati shildreischi. If you had a swimming pool of boiling hot water, and no one would dare to go near the water. One shagits, one rosha comes along, and he jumps in. Others learn. He can jump in. I can also do it. So was it with Amalek. The entire world was afraid to come close to Klal Yisrael. They were reishim, they were boiling hot. No one would come near them. Who would start up with Israel? Look what happened to Parai and his empire. No one would come close. Amalek came. After that we find there were constant wars.
Amalek dead
now? No. After that there was constant wars. That's what it means, korcho. First of all, whatever happened, they denied that it happened from the Almighty. Because they had no fear for Hashem. And not only they denied, but they influenced this denial into the world. Kor v'chaim, what was hot before, they made cold now. They cooled off the fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the entire world. This was Amalek. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Milchomo, I have war with Amalek, door, every generation. And we see even further. We don't find by any other nation the prophecy or the commandment that we find by Amalek. By Amalek, we are commanded, Timche Ezecher Amalek. Destroy every remembrance of Amalek. Mishorat Seah. Nothing must remain from Amalek. They should be destroyed. The property should be destroyed. Their animals should be destroyed. So no one will ever say, this belonged to Amalek, and then his name is remembered in the world. This is what the Torah commanded us. We don't find that by other nations. There are many nations that worship idolatry. Many in the Avodah Zarah.
So then the Gemara tells us there's a difference. All of the idolaters, first of all, they didn't believe the world was heavy. They didn't believe the world didn't have a master. They held the world had a master, and that's why they were worshipping it. When they saw the great powers of the sun, so they worshipped the sun. When they saw the great powers of the rains, they worshipped the rains, they worshipped fire, they worshipped the sea. They didn't believe that the world was completely ownerless. And not only that, but the Gemara tells us that deep in the heart of the idolaters, all of these forces are to the degree of Elohim. It's their God. But the Almighty is to the degree of Elokor d'Elokor. He's the God of all gods. Even the idolatrous nations, when they worship the forces of the world, deep down they believed that there was a supreme force over that force. This was idolatry. The Rambam brings that the original source of idolatry was to worship everything that the Almighty had made. Not so with Amalek. Amalek's quality is denial. They deny that there's any master in the world. They deny there's any control in the world. The world is hefker, is ownerless. There is no one that you have to submit a report to. There's no one you have to answer to. Anything that happens is pure mikrokora. It's just a matter of circumstance and events. This was Amalek. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Timche Ezekra Amalek. Amalek must be totally destroyed. And Bilam, in his prophecy, in Parshas Bullock, also said in Chof Daled Posuchof, Vayares Amalek, he saw Amalek, Vayiso Mesholem Vayemar, and he said, Reishis Goyim Amalek, the source of all of the evil in the nations of the world is Amalek. Vachrise Ade Evad Oved, and their end shall be total destruction. All of the nations, it's possible that they could become good. But the source of the evil in the nations, that's Amalek. And their end will be Adi Ovaid, complete destruction. This is what Bilam, the Gaisha prophet, saw. And he prophesied. So this is Amalek. Accordingly, in the eyes of Amalek, there's no master of the world. There's no conscience to the world. There are no dictates to the world. There's no one to answer to. And there are no lines which define between right and wrong, good and evil. Because the whole reason why there should be clear definitions between good and evil is because there's a master to the world that has commanded us this. And the fact that Amalek has the second power, this power of the Ambati, of the swimming pool, where they can bring their poison and influence the world with it. Therefore, they create total chaos and confusion in the dictates of right and wrong in the world. And this really we find by their grandfather. Amalek was the grandson of Esau. And this was Esau's quality. Esau was the ultimate Rosh, the evil of all evils. Jacob was the righteous of all righteous. Yet Esav had succeeded in convincing his father Yitzchok that he was more righteous. Tzayid b'fiv, through his deceit, he had created sufficient confusion between the lines of good and evil, but even Yitzchok of evil, Isaac, was certain that Esav was the righteous. And this is Amalek that we answer. Now we can understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yod Al Kes Kor, when he says that I take an oath by my name and my throne, that I will have war with Amalek forever, his name is not spelled complete, and his throne is not spelled complete. He says, as long as Amalek is in the world, my name is not complete, and my throne is not complete. Because how can my name be complete if they are capable of confusing and eradicating my name? How can my throne be complete, which represents my rule in the world, if they reject it totally and can influence the nations of the world in this way? This is the quality of Amalek. Now, if we give some thought to what we've just said, we find that actually the power of Amalek is exactly the contrary to the power of a king of Israel. Because what was the king of Israel's function? His function was to bring the kingship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world and to be mefarshim it, to publicize it to the nations of the world. He represented, he held the banner of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mi sheim lechan itchil arayam, he who caused me to reign over the sea will be the king of Israel. And Amalek is the one who rejects the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who denies that there's any such force in the world. So they're totally contrary to each other. It was the king of Israel's responsibility to see that Torah ruled. That was his responsibility. It's every king's responsibility to see that there's government, to see that there's law and order. But in particular, the responsibility of the king of Israel was to see that the law of Torah ruled. Like we read that he must write two Sifrei Torah. One was put in security, the other must go wherever he goes. To see that the word of the Almighty reigned. Many times, you'll find in governments where they become tripped up over their own laws. They make laws guaranteeing peace and guaranteeing civil rights and guaranteeing law and order. And these same laws become the protection of those who are counter to peace, those who are counter to law and order. The laws protect the criminals. And this is very common. And you have this today in the world with organized crime, with mafia. Governments make laws, and these laws become the greatest support to the mafia and organized crime. But they can't do anything against them because they're protected by the law. Because there lacks a king. Because it's the king's responsibility to see that there is law in the world. And there is right and wrong. An example we have, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, the Rambam brings it in Hilchos Nisayach. In Perek Beis, Hilchos Ritzeach, Halacha Dalet. The Rambam states there are many times when someone can be a murderer, but because of a technicality, we cannot do anything to him. He's saying by a technicality in the law. For example, if he doesn't kill himself, but he hires someone else to kill. Or he doesn't kill with his hands, but he kills with an indirect cause. For example, he'll tie someone up and leave him there in a place where wild animals will come. Tie someone up in the bush. Through technicalities, we cannot kill him. Because the Torah required before the Beis Din, before the courts can kill him, he must kill with his hands. And himself, not hire another killer. And so forth. And even though these people are guilty of the death penalty mishamayim by heaven, but our courts cannot touch them. Then the Rambam writes, and this is the Gemara, V'chol eila ratzchonim u'kiyetzim behem, she'enen mechuyovei bises bezdi. All of these murderers, who are murderers but they are not guilty of the death penalty by the Bezdi, im rotz melech Yisrael lohorgum, if the king of Israel wants to kill them, b'din malchus, through his powers as a king, b'takonas ha'elam, in order to ensure that there is law and order in the world, harashut biyodeh, he has permission. And this was done many times in the time of Dovid HaMelech, where through a technicality of the law the courts could not kill them, but it was the responsibility of the king to do so, and he did it publicly to cast a fear in the eyes of all of the criminals that there is a master to the world. There is an order to the world. This is the function of the king. So we see that what the king stands for and what Hamolek stands for are exactly diametrically opposed. Amalek stands for the rejection of the monarchy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, the rejection of any law and order in the world. And the king, his function is to bring monarchy, to bring this Malchus into the world. This is why the Gemara tells us, Ma'midin Melech Tchilon. First we must appoint a king, and then we go to war against Amalek. Because without the power of a king, we will not be able to destroy Amalek. So therefore the first mitzvah when we come into Eretz Yisrael is to appoint a king. So the king can represent and carry the monarchy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. Then from there we go to war against Amalek, who is the one who rejects the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we need the force and the power of Malchus to do so. And then we build his Beis HaMikdash. Because his Beis HaMikdash is the manifestation that he and he alone is the king in the world. And as long as Amalek is in the world, he says, my throne and my name and my Malchus is not complete, is not perfect. This is the Seder Hadvarim, this is the order of events. This is why Mordechai and Esther, who came to war against Haman, had to have this power of kingship. Otherwise, they would not have succeeded against Haman. Haman totally denied any power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, he wouldn't have dared stand up against Klal Yisrael. The audacity of Haman was to destroy Lahabed or Lahareg. Lahareg is Kol HaYehudim, all of the Jews in the world. Minar Vazokein, from the young to the old, taf and oshim, women and children, the yain effort in one day, which love and voice, and to take all of their belongings, all of their property. Could someone think of doing that and be free of the revenge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu if he believed in the Almighty? He totally rejected. He denied with the ultimate of denial. Not only that, but he incited all of the nations of the world against Israel. He wouldn't have been able to do it himself. He went to the king, and the king sent out letters to all of his provinces that on that day stand up and kill them. There's no point in leaving them. This was the Hitler Yimach Shemah of that day. This was all totally contrary to Melech Yisrael. And the truth of the matter is, the whole essence of Haman came because there lacked a king in Israel. Why do we say this? In Shmuel, when Shmuel the prophet sent Shaul, he sent Shaul to destroy Amalek. This was years before. Perek Tesbov. This, incidentally, is the Haftarah for this Shabbos. Shabbos Zohar, the Shabbos before Purim. And he told Shaul, Ki Amar Hashem, this is what Hashem has said. I have seen what Amalek has done to Israel. Ato, now go, v'kisas Amalek, destroy Amalek, v'achramtem es kol ha-shelei, destroy everything that belongs to them. Leisach malolov, do not have any mercy on them. Every man and woman, every child, every ox and sheep and camel and donkey. So Shaul took his armies, took 10,000 men from Yehuda, and he came to the city of Amalek, and he warred against them. Then he captured Agog, the king of Amalek. He captured him alive. And Shaul and the nation had mercy on Agog, the king of Amalek, and on the best of the sheep and the cattle. The Almighty then came to Shmuel, and he said, Nihamti ki imlachti Shaul the Melech. I have regret that I have made Shaul the king, because he has not listened to my word. And Shmuel became very angry and very upset with this. And the next morning, when Shaul, King Saul, came back, Shmuel came to him and said, and Shaul said, Baruch atol Hashem, akimesi dvar Hashem. He says, I have fulfilled everything that the Almighty told me to. And Shmuel said, and what is the sound of the sheep that I hear, and the sound of the cattle? So Shaul said, I brought them from Amalek, they're the best, I brought them to bring them as sacrifices. And Shmuel said to Shaul, I will tell you what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told me last night. Im koten ato be'inecho, if you are small in your own eyes, rosh shifti Yisrael ato, but you happen to be the king of Israel, and you were sent to destroy all of Amalek, and why didn't you listen to the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want sacrifices, or does he want that his voice should be listened to? So Shaul said, finally, Chotosi ki avarti espi Hashem es dvorecho. I have sinned, I have transgressed the word of Hashem. Ki yoreisi esoko, because I feared the nation, ve'eshma b'keilom, and I listened to their voice. And Shmuel said, because you have disgraced the word of Hashem, you are disgraced from becoming the king of Israel. and forever the kingship shall leave your family. Now what did Shaul say? Your ACSOM. I didn't do what you said because I feared the nation. And this is contrary to a king. It states, Song Tasim Alecho Melech, you shall place a king over you in order that the nation shall fear you. What is the function of the king? To bring the monarchy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the nation. That they should fear the Almighty. And if the king fears the nation, so no longer he's the king, they're the king. If he fears the nation, he's the servant, he's the subject, and they're the king. And to transgress the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore the kingship was taken away from him. We see that David HaMelech sinned many times, but he did not lose the kingship. Saul lost the kingship this one time. Because a king that sins can still be a king. But a king that fears the nation, that's not a king anymore. That's a subject, not a king. And what happened? So the sages tell us that because he did not kill Agog, Haman subsequently was born from Agog. And the whole story of Purim, the whole danger of Purim, came about because Shaul feared the nation. And he let Agog live. And Haman was this descendant of Agog. So we see that Haman was the essence of a lack of kingship in Israel. He rejected the kingship, and he was the essence of the lack of kingship. This was his whole being, his total being. Had there been a kingship in Israel, then there would be no Haman. Now Mordechai and Esther, they were the kings. And they were the descendants of Shaul. And they had the opportunity now to make good what Shaul fell short at. And he was Omad the parents. What happened then? The Gemara tells us it was a very difficult time for Klal Yisrael. The Gemara in Megillah and Daf Yud Beis states that they asked Rav Shimon ben Yochai, why was it that such a decree came upon Klal Yisrael? So Rav Shimon ben Yochai said, perhaps you could say a reason. So they said, perhaps it was because they went and they partook in the great feast of Achashverosh. Now this feast was made only with the intention of Avera, that you should assimilate and you should leave the laws of the Torah. And they shouldn't have been there. And they went there and they were under the influences of assimilation. He said, maybe that's the reason. So on that, Reb Shimon ben Yochai answered, he says, if that would be the reason, then those that were in Shushan should have been under the decree. But why the Jews all over the world? They weren't at the feast. So then Reb Shimon ben Yochai said, the reason is because they bowed to the idol during the time of Nebuchadnezzar, which was right before Ahasuerus. This is why the decree came upon them. Rashi in the Megillah tells us that Mordechai knew what was taking place. Through prophecy, he knew that the decree was sealed because of the avedas of Klal Yisrael. And when Haman was chosen to be a viceroy by Ahasuerus, so the Megillah tells us that the king commanded that everyone should bow to him. And everyone did bow to him. Mordechai would not bow. So the Medrash asks, Yehudi, Loma Nikrishma Yehudi.
Why was Mordechai called Yehudi? He wasn't from Yehuda, he was from Binyamin. Lefi sheyachid shmei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yehudi has the letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And he was the one who sanctified and spread the Almighty's name in the world. Lechol bayayelam, to the entire world. How? Said lo yichra ve leishtachave. He would not bow. The Medrash asked, b'chi kam torin hoyo? What was Mordechai? A troublemaker. Ve'ever al gzeres ha-melech. If the king said that everyone should bow to Haman, why won't Mordechai bow? Because when Haman received this authority that everyone should bow to him, he hung an idol on his heart. And he wanted everyone to bow to the idol. And when Haman saw that Mordechai refused to bow, he became very angry. And Mordechai said, "Yesh odanam is goel al kol agim. There is someone who is greater than everyone in the world, and I will bow to this idol." And because he was miyachid shmoi, that he brought the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Kol Bei Olam, to the entire world, at a time when everyone was bowing, this is why he was called Ish Yehudi. Yehudi has the yud and the hay of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And the Targum Sheni tells us something else. Mordechai told Haman, when Haman demanded that he bows, Mordechai said, "I come from Binyamin." And Binyamin was the only one of the sons that never bowed to your grandfather, Esau. When Yaakov was returning from the house of Laban, and he confronted Esau, so Yaakov, with all of the children and all of the wives, went to bow to Esau. And Binyamin wasn't born yet. Binyamin was the only one who was born in Eretz Yisrael. So Binyamin never bowed to Esau. And the Gemara says that it was because of that that the Beis HaMikdash was built in the territory of Binyamin. Because Binyamin was free of this influence of having to bow to Esau. And Mordechai said, "I come from Binyamin. And my father never bowed to your grandfather. And therefore I also shall not bow." So Mordechai and Esther stood up with all of their forces and with all of their powers against Haman. And they brought out the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. And Haman, his power had come from the lack of kingship in the world when Shaul failed to destroy Amalek. And through Mordechai and Esther, through their power of kingship, they were able to destroy Haman. This is what the Gemara says, that first we must make a king and then destroy Amalek. And how did they do it? We find that they used only one tool in the whole Megillah. And that was, as it states at the end of the Megillah, Divrei Zakosom, their pasts and their prayers. We find consistently that is all they did was pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It says that when the decree came out, so Mordechai went and he put on sackcloth and he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he told Esther, Esther said, "Gather up all the people, Lech Knesses, Kol HaYehudim," and the Gemara says, "Knos means Beis HaKnesses, bring them into the shuls, that they should daven b'tzibur." And she fasted for 3 days and three nights. And at the end of the Megillah it states, Divrei Zakosom, their fasts and their prayers. Because the prayer is contrary to the power of Amalek.
Amalek is the one who denies there's any control in the world. And when a Jew is mispalel, he links everything that happens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If it's good, he thanks him for it. If it's not good, so he prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it should be good. The prayer brings out the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Amalek is the one who denies the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is why that Mordechai and Esther not only represented great people, but also the power of kingship of Malchi Israel, because the adversary was Haman. And Haman was from Amalek. And the power of Amalek, which is bent on destroying the influence of the Almighty in this world, can be overcome only by Klal Yisrael under the leadership of a great king, which is the ambassador to bring the influence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. And we find all the time that Amalek was defeated by kings. He was defeated by Meshe, who was a king, by Yeshua, who was a king, almost by Shaul. Shaul did not defeat him completely, and because of that he lost the kingship. By Dovid HaMelech, and then the Beis HaMikdash was built. And now by Mordechai and Esther, and then shortly afterwards they went to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. The complete eradication of Amalek, the Torah tells us though, will only be by Yemahu, on that day. That day when the Mashiach comes, and we return to Eretz Yisrael, and we appoint the seed of David as our king, then he will fight Amalek. And he will totally destroy Amalek. And then the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt forever. And then it states, V'hoya Hashem Echod Ushmei Echod, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name then will be one. We should be zecher that just like we saw great miracles during the time of Purim in Shushan Abira, and the Amalek of that day be destroyed, to again see great miracles of Klal Yisrael wherever they may be, and again the power of Haman and Amalek should be destroyed. We should be zecher to the Yeshuas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.